I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, everyone. I'm JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. 12 hours ago, Jeff Goldberg dropped a story in The Atlantic in which he ran through all of the Donald Trump's greatest hits, but then also had a bunch of new stuff from John Kelly, who is out on the record. And, you know, like, this should be a bombshell. It should destroy the Trump campaign. It should cause Kamala Harris to wind up with 55% of the vote. Sarah, hit me. Because I get the sense you're loaded for bear on this, and I want the full Megilla from you.
Yeah, let me just start by saying, normally, in a normal circumstance, this would be the October surprise. Former chief of staff for a president comes out and said he routinely praised Hitler's generals. And this would come shortly after the president himself had said that he wants to use the military against the enemy within, meaning Americans who do not agree with him politically. This should be the whole ballgame. But in our current circumstances, the October surprise would be the media giving this the seriousness, the gravity, and the longevity, meaning this is not a one-day news story. It's not something we talk about for a 12-hour news cycle. It's the kind of thing that explodes a campaign. Now, I just did a big Twitter thread on this because I'm out of my mind on a couple specific pieces. One is, when I tweeted this story last night, I immediately had sort of the Trump defending sycophants in my comments saying, well, this is a lie. You know, these have been debunked. These are anonymously sourced. And I responded, these are not anonymously sourced. John Kelly is on the record. He's not just on the record in The Atlantic. He did recordings with the New York Times, which means John Kelly is officially on a media tour with the information that he has about Donald Trump. Right. John Kelly's taking it seriously enough that he went with the New York Times and did recordings, and he gave all this new information to Jeffrey Goldberg. And one of the things that frustrates me about people saying that, like, and this is what happens when something like this drops. Like, there is a media way, or there's like a way that Trump defenders, they isolate the single instance and they try to find something that they can grab onto to discredit it. Either the context, we don't know the context. I'm watching dead-eyed Scott Jennings on CNN saying, well, and David Urban, we don't know. And also the real Nazis are the kids on college campuses. Nobody look at the guy praising Hitler's generals who might run the country, you know, in 3 months. These people make me sick. They make me physically ill the way that they treat this. But here's the thing. They want to gaslight you. This is peak gaslighting time, where they come for us to try to isolate the individual and say there's something wrong with the individual story, some reason it can't be trusted. And they want us to ignore the cumulative weight of the evidence. General Kelly is not alone, not by a long shot. You've got Mike Pence saying that Donald Trump is unfit for office because he put himself over the Constitution and asked Mike Pence to do the same. You've got Milley on the record calling Donald Trump a fascist. You've got his old, Homeland Security advisor saying he's unfit. John Bolton saying he's unfit. His former White House attorney saying he's unfit. Ty Cobb. They're not all lying. It's just like the sexual assault victims. Are they all lying? Every single one of them? But because Trump defenders do this thing where they circle the wagons and they pinpoint one thing. They want you to forget all of the other context, not the least of which is the stuff we hear coming from Trump himself. Here's the reason that we know that Donald Trump talks like this about soldiers. He said it on the record about John McCain.
Yes.
Right? He said it yes. on the record. How do we know that he thinks Hitler's kind of a cool guy? Is he out there right now calling Americans vermin? Is he talking about immigrants poisoning the blood of our country? He sure is.
Didn't he have dinner with a Nazi?
Did he dine with a white supremacist, a self-described white supremacist? We have the evidence we need. This is a question of whether we decide to take it seriously. And I will tell you, this is the media's last opportunity to cover the stakes and not the race. Cover the stakes and not the race. I'll let someone else talk now.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate Sarah giving me a stiff backbone here and getting my blood pressure going, because it is easy to go into the back, because we're in year nine of this, and you wrote the whole triad about the normalization. It's easy to get your mind as a political animal naturally goes to, does this matter? What's the meta commentary around this? What's the impact? And it's kind of like, yeah, I have to actively stop myself from doing that, right? And focus yeah. instead on the substance of the threat and the concern, which is extremely alarming, which should be alarming, which you know, if there was a cacophonous echo chamber of people discussing all of the alarm, would certainly have an impact. And if it wouldn't, then it wouldn't. It would tell us more about the country than it would about what the arguments were being made. To me, I think the most alarming thing substantively in there, and I had Jeffrey Goldberg on The Daily today, so it's interesting to kind of hear his perspective on this. But the substantively interesting thing that I found was not the Hitler generals in isolation, but it was in combo with the story about how he said during the George Floyd protests that he wishes his generals were more like the Chinese generals in Tiananmen Square. And then there's another anecdote, you know, where he calls himself, he calls the generals fucking wusses, or I don't have the exact quote in front of me.
He uses the P
doesn't
word.
Doesn't use the wuss
he uses
version.
The P word. Okay. He calls them that because they didn't want to shoot the protesters in the leg during the George Floyd protests. Didn't have the same mentality for the Capitol Police, I would notice. He didn't want them to shoot his people.
It's so weird.
Was storming the Capitol. That is weird. To me, I thought that was like, that's the most interesting part, because it's like, you know, you can get wrapped around the axle on the Nazi thing. Like, is he really a Nazi? And how much of a Nazi? And what did he like about the Nazis? And it's like, he's telling you what he actually wants, right? Like, if you just put it all together, like, what he wants is generals that will do whatever he says, that will go after his enemies. And he wants that in the second term. He thinks he's going to be able to get that in the second term. And as the term goes on, and as he becomes older and less inhibited and more, surrounded by an increasingly small circle of crazies, the risk becomes higher and higher that he's able to execute on it, right? And so, I mean, to me, like, that is the big takeaway from this as far as the practical element of what to look for in a second term, and what's the most alarming about it. And, you know, the other thing when I asked Goldberg about this, Jeffrey, what he said was, I was like, so what? How do they really feel? Like, you know, because that's the thing that's kind of hard for me to parse, because I don't know these guys. Like, where are they on the scale from this is bluster from Trump that is un-American to I'm actually really fucking scared that he's going to do this stuff? And Jeffrey said he's like, they're scared shitless. He's like, they really think that he's going to do the stuff. Like, that's the side that they fall on. It's not, because it would be bad enough, right? Like, if it was bluster, if it was un-American talk, if he's talking like a fascist, but he's all talk, no action. Like, to me, that's still bad. Like, that's still disqualifying. We don't want a president of the United States, you know, talking like a mini Mussolini, right? Like, that is disqualifying in itself. But I thought it was telling that these guys, at least Milley and Kelly, clearly think the risk is real, is high.
Let's talk about this part for a second, because this is the part that's got me. So on one hand, you do have Kelly 2 weeks before the election, so we're trying to make a difference here, right? He goes to Jeff Goldberg, with whom he clearly has a relationship. Jeff Goldberg's an excellent reporter, has clearly cultivated strong relationships with these guys. He's been the point person writing these stories, whether he did a big profile of Millie. We got the Mattis sort of on background stuff. That was all in the Atlantic. So I presume Jeff Goldberg is like sourced up hard on this. And then he goes to the New York Times, right? And he's willing to make recordings. Here's the thing, though. Anything that is filtered through the elite media is not going to help. It's not nothing, right? It's not nothing. It's important. But we don't live in the media environment that we used to live in, where this is the kind of thing that creates a bombshell that ricochets everywhere. And this is why Kelly and Mattis and everybody who's ever gone on background, right? They have to go look America in the eye and say this. It cannot be filtered through a media lens that the people we need to reach distrust. Fairly or unfairly, they are distrusted, right, by the exact people that this needs to penetrate. And that is why I am begging these generals, if they are scared, if they're as scared as Tim just said they are, if they're as scared as Jeffrey Goldberg says, go say it straight to the American people. It's not hard. Every media in the world will show up if you just say, we're going to hold a press conference, we're going to talk to you, and we're going to take questions.
Or just say it to Brett Baer.
Yeah, or say it to Brett Baer. Good, but just say it live. People need to be able to see your eyes, man.
Fox would put it on air. If John Kelly said that they would, that called Brett Baer, they would put it on the air. They would.
Okay, so I guess I have a question. Do they need to reach the people who are fully siloed at this point, or do they need to reach people who are just low information, not really paying attention voters? And then the sort of, you know, Wall Street Journal editorial page, the people who aren't actually siloed. Because if that's the, like, if the point is, like, you got to flip a bunch of Trump voters, then yes, like, you got to find a way to puncture their meat. But if you got to get a bunch of, you know, people who are watching football who may or may not vote, you could do this with paid media, couldn't you? Like, I mean, they've raised $50 gajillion, the Harris
you
campaign.
Could.
This is
you
what
could.
You take this audio and you put it into an ad and you just drop $50 million of this ad on Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Right.
I think.
No?
Yes. True. You could. That's I mean, look, that's better than what we have right now. The reason I think the press conference matters such a great deal, I think it matters when people take questions, right? And I think it matters when there's a bunch of people together, right? Not just one person. And I think that if Kelly, who was the chief of staff, who's like a very respected general, led the charge, that others might go with him. There is something about looking people in the eye. And look, if they want to do a live interview with on Fox News, fine, I'll take it. I'll take it for the love of God. But this is the media will do with this is where Tim and I don't know what you think about this. I am loathe generally to blame the media because the media is not a thing. But I will say the extent to which people are covering the race and everybody's a freaking analyst. Tim's point about the meta conversation, we only have the meta conversation. No one's having the base level conversation around, God, I was watching CNN last night, a clip of Scott Jennings, Bakari Sellers, Ashley Allison, like they were doing one of those roundtables on Laura Coates, David Urban. And like, if you just leave it to the meta analysis, everybody can obfuscate and change the conversation.
You've got to have both sides of the argument represented. You know, that's a really good job by CNN.
Is it good for Trump or is it bad for Trump? No. Is it good or is it right or wrong? Was it right or wrong? Like, is what he's doing right or wrong? Right? Like, they don't have that. I would say this. I don't know if our clips get to these people. There was somebody who tweeted that I saw yesterday that was like, it's an alarming sign if Sarah is begging John Kelly publicly to do a press conference because it means that private entreaties are not working. And I'm like, yeah, private entreaties are not working, by the way. We're all doing private entreaties. They're not working. Okay. If they were working, we wouldn't be talking about it. And you would be seeing the result of the private entreaties because we're 13 days away now. So, yeah. Breaking news, private entreaties to all these people are not working. So a public message that maybe hopefully could resonate is like, none of the, like, we are in a communications battle space to get people to understand what the real threat is of Trump. And none of these guys would go into a real world war battle space. None of these guys would go into a real battle space with like hands tied behind their back like this. Like you have Donald Trump on one side. It's like, I will go in front of the camera. I will go into a stump speech and I will say, they are liars. They are losers. They are idiots. They are morons. They don't know what they're doing. I love this country. I love America. They hate America. Okay. And he will use every communications tool at his disposal to do it. And then to counter that, you know, they will say, well, I'll do an audio message with the New York Times that's kind of rambly and where I sort of acknowledge that Trump has some good qualities, but he also might be a fascist and I'm really worried about it. You would never do this. It's like, you know, the equivalent to a military is like, you know, you guys, like, they are dropping drones and just like tomahawks on your head and you're just like, well,
I'm going to bring out the artillery. The artillery is all the way back there at the armory. Do we need to get it out and drag it out towards the front lines?
Bring out the artillery. Bring it out and have the full, just have it out fully. Because the other thing, my other point is, like, the pretense is also wrong. It's like the fact that, like, this is not politics, like, what they're doing is not, you know, Milley talking to Woodward and Kelly talking to Schmidt and Goldberg and Maggie. Like, the idea is that, like, well, this isn't politics, right? Like, this is what generals do. We talk to reporters for history books and so people can have it down. It's like, it's 2 weeks up for the election. Whether or not you intend it to be politics, it is. Like, you're already in the politics bucket, okay? You're well into particularly Kelly, not Milley, you could maybe make an argument for is not in the politics bucket, but Kelly, you know, during the Times.
Mattis.
Yeah, during the Times interview, Kelly says, like, well, I acknowledge I went in and took a political job, but at this point, I'm basically a retired general. And as a retired general, I would never deign to tell the American people who to vote for. And I'm like, you're a retired chief of staff, actually. Actually, you're a retired chief of staff. There are retired generals out there. Bill McRaven is a retired general, and he's telling people who to vote for also, by the way. But, like, you are a retired chief of staff. That was your last job. So after you left being a general, you took two other jobs after that. And so so that's the part, like, that is frustrating, that gets me mad. But I'm trying to rechannel my anger from Kelly, who's doing the right thing, towards all of the assholes like Tom Cotton, you know, who know that John Kelly is telling the truth, who revere John Kelly, who understand the importance, you know, like how much he sacrificed for this country, who frankly like John Kelly a lot better than I do when it comes to his policy proposals. You know, like I found John Kelly's immigration regime to be unconscionable. So, like, there's a group of Republicans who are much more aligned with John Kelly who are now either silent or trying to pretend like they believe Donald Trump over him, which is preposterous. So I'm trying to refocus my anger at those guys.
I got a question. Can you name or point to a single anti-Trump type at the elite level who is going to be swayed by this?
No. Of course not. And like,
that's kind of telling, right? Well, isn't
on,
it telling
on,
that there's
on
not
one
a...
Second.
No,
do
am I wrong? Maybe I'm wrong.
All right, so I haven't, I'll admit, you guys, I appreciated everybody's nice comments about my hair during the last event. You can see that I woke up today, I'm on the West Coast. I did nothing. I haven't showered, I haven't done anything, because I've been sitting on Twitter and sitting on email and whatever. Right, healthy. Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, how do we get these guys to speak out, right? How do we, I'm looking for signs, too, from that, like, This feels to me like at least a Dispatchian moment.
Hmm. That's such an interesting question.
It should be a Dispatchian moment, and not just.
Why does it matter who they endorse?
Not just Nick
Cattagio. Jonah retweeted me today. Jonah retweeted me. I don't want to get down to the Dispatch thing. Jonah retweeted me.
I'm just saying, like, will it matter to some of the anti types? I do think that there are the best of them.
Does Rich Lowry have anything to say? Like, do you see what I'm saying? Like,
this is the problem with all this, also, is, and this is a little bit, you know, like the reality is there's a lot of people that try to live in this gray space, you know, but the reality is anytime something like this happens, like you can be as far down the MAGA pipeline as possible. I mean, you could be the type of person that we all find disgusting. Like Bill Barr, I'll speak for myself. Again, John Kelly sacrificed his child for the country, obviously has great traits and is a patriot. I found his immigration regime disgusting. Like, but John Kelly, like these guys were not rhinos. It's not like the Gary Cohn types or whatever, you know, that went in. Like people that were fully on board the Trump project. Let's put it that way. Fully on board the Trump project, like Bill Barr and John Kelly. They speak out and they get treated like they're us. You know, like there is no, like as soon as you've done that, it's like all these guys try to pretend like, oh, well, you know, if it was somebody without Trump derangement syndrome that was talking about this, then maybe it would have more credibility. Right. But like clearly this guy, John Kelly, is like these guys have lost their mind. They think he's Hitler now. Like there's no, you know, they pretend like there is some higher minded way to be anti-Trump. But anytime anybody actually speaks out with clear eyes about the threat of Trump, those concerns at the elite level are immediately rejected and they send them down the bulwark chute because that's the only way to maintain the posture, right? Like that's the only way for them to maintain their posture. And so they don't fucking matter, actually. It's the voters that matter, right?
Right.
Can I read you something that Nikki Haley just tweeted?
Yeah, go ahead. No. But then I want to ask you about Bill's newsletter this morning.
Okay, Nikki Haley just tweeted, thanks to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, there's chaos around the world. The debacle they created in Afghanistan emboldened our enemies. Russia invaded Ukraine. Iranian proxies started a war with Israel, and China threatens Taiwan daily. Make no mistake, American national security is at risk if Kamala Harris becomes president. This is Nikki Haley being enlisted in this moment to change the conversation, right? This is what Trump will do. There's his campaign is genius about this. They know that if you don't like the conversation we're having, change it. I remain convinced the Springfield conversation, that they kept that thing going, A, because they thought it was good to keep it in somewhere in the vein of immigration, but also it was because Trump had just gotten absolutely smoked at the debate and they wanted that
schlonged
conversation to end.
The word
so no matter
is
how
schlonged.
Insane their conversation was about eating cats and dogs, for them that was better terrain. Then Trump got smoked at the debate. And so they are going to deploy people now to try to change this conversation. I do think our job and the job of any media person who is listening is to not let this go. This is the whole ballgame. Like, do you think that Trump will engage in the peaceful transfer of power if he is reelected? No. How do we know that? He didn't do it last time. That's it. He lied to everybody. He caused an insurrection. These generals, his chief of staff, his vice president, they're all telling us. And what? We're just going to be like, Kamala Harris lost a point in Michigan.
Yeah, I'll give you a tangible example of this, actually. How about this? And all this stuff, I think, only matters on the margins, but it matters as far as keeping stuff in. Like, what's the high salience issue the last 13 days? Does matter. Mattered in 2016, mattered in 2020. You know, they've got sick with this on the Hill. You know, there's a period in 2017 where after something like this, there'd be people running around the Hill going, Senator Cornyn, what do you think about this? You know, Congressman McCall, what do you think about this? Right. Our colleague Joe Perticone said he was looking at the congressional social media feeds. He's like, none of the congressional Republicans have said anything about this. Right. Like, Like you would think that'd be something you'd be interested to hear about. Or do none of you who confirmed, at least on the Senate side, who confirmed John Kelly to the cabinet, does it not concern any of you that he thinks that the candidate you're supporting is a fascist? Have you talked to John Kelly? Have you called John Kelly? Like, you know, I got one reporter in trouble on MSNBC because I was on a panel with them, and I was like, has J.D. Vance called Mike Pence? The reporter was a Mike Pence, or was a J.D. Vance, like, beat reporter. And they were like, I don't actually know the answer to that. And I didn't really mean to put him on the spot. But it's like, people aren't thinking about this like that, right? It's like, isn't this crazy? Has Tom Cotton called John Kelly to see what he thinks? To, like, hash it out? To disagree? I mean, he approved it. He admired him. He sent multiple tweets about how great John Kelly was.
Nobody asks
these questions.
Isn't
he at least curious?
Because we all know the answers already.
Right, because they know it's true.
Isn't that
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the answer is that.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Can I just introduce a simple moment of levity in all of this? Because I do feel like you need a little comic relief to let some of the tension out. The part that I thought was maybe the best in the Jeff Goldberg piece is when Trump says to Kelly, "I wish I had generals like the Germans." And Kelly said to him, and you imagine this is the kind of private joke that one does with oneself to keep one's sanity, says, "Oh, which ones? Like Bismarck's generals? Because, as Kelly says, he knows full well that Donald Trump has no fucking idea who Bismarck is. Right. Donald Trump has never heard of the Franco-Prussian War. Donald Trump might have been commander in chief of the greatest military force the world has ever known, but he's never fucking heard of the Franco-Prussian War. And then when Trump is like, no, you know, the other ones, Hitler's generals. Kelly says, you know, Hitler's generals tried to kill him. And Rommel had to. And the phrase Kelly uses, I believe, was, President Trump was not familiar with the name Rommel.
Yeah.
Probably the single most famous German general of the last 100 years. And he just never even heard of him. And that level of invincible ignorance is...
Maybe he thought it was pronounced differently. Like Rommel.
Rommel.
Maybe he just didn't recognize the pronunciation. You know,
It's probably that.
We're, you know, we live in a world in which 47% of the country is going to vote for this guy who's an unbelievable ignoramus, and I found that darkly funny. But also, again, this is my warm blanket. Nobody's going to make this choice accidentally, right? And here I really do believe this. I believe that it is simply unfathomable that more than, say, 5% of Trump's voters will come to this having never heard a single word about any of this. They will. They'll have heard it somewhere. They'll have seen it in an ad. They'll have seen it in a newspaper or on a TikTok. They will have maybe seen the denials on Fox. They talked about it on Fox and Friends, even to dismiss it, right? And so it's not like they will be totally blind to the fact that this is a thing that is out there that happened. And so people are going to choose it.
Brian Kilmeade defense that he might just not have been aware that like comparing yourself to the Germans is a third rail. I like that.
It's
he
was
just
thing.
Like, yeah, he might just not. He just it was a natural. He just might not have been aware of that.
You know, the two third rails in American politics, they always say Social Security reform,
Hitler,
and comparing yourself to Hitler.
Yeah,
it's like, those are the two things
Trump
no one can
is
do.
Always, guys, he's too stupid to know this. All right, is that like they always at the end of the day they always fall back on? He's actually too dumb to be intentionally bad. Great, it's reassuring.
It's the Ross Douthat angle, right?
Can I just, while you're talking about Trump being an absolute idiot, I discover some of the more bad faith anti-antis. I discover new ones that I find to be the most objectionable. Charlie Cook. Accidental confusion there. Charlie Cook over at NR has become one of the very worst. And I got in an argument with Key and with Josh Grashauer, who I think we've all had on our shows in the past.
Why are you spending time with these guys, Sarah?
Can I just, hold on. It's not about spending time with them. It's about the way that these conversations evolve or like what people focus on. So after the event with Liz Cheney and Kamala Harris,
and you,
both of them, and me, which is why I felt really like strongly about jumping in on this. Josh tweeted that Liz Cheney said that the abortion restrictions, the reversal of Dobbs, had gone too far, which then Charlie Cook tweeted with like quote tweets around too far. She never said that. She just didn't say it. It was just a lie. It was made up. It was about
this is my shocked face.
Yeah. It was about maternal health, the discussion was, and Liz was talking about her concerns that in some states, like Texas, where the state-level laws are so restrictive that it's causing women not to be able to get the care that they need. That was what she added to the conversation, and I included the direct quotes. Neither of them deleted their tweets. They just were happy to keep the misinformation flowing because they think in this moment, The real enemy is Liz Cheney, and that we need to spend more time with Liz Cheney explaining herself for her evolution. And I saw a bunch of other people pick this up too, a bunch of the anti-antis. Even Nick Cottagio wrote an excellent piece. But it's still like, this is where the navel gazing is. They refuse to engage on the substance of Donald Trump's threat, but they are happy to sit and just pick over Liz Cheney's abortion policy and where her disagreements are with Kamala Harris. But that is even not the point of what I was saying. Charlie Cook also wrote a piece in which he called Kamala Harris an idiot. And his whole piece was about how she was an idiot. And I gotta say, I was listening to her talk when I was interviewing her, and I was thinking about that because, you know what, is she a little standard politician-y? Like, does she kind of lapse into her stump speech? Sure. Is she an idiot? Not by any stretch of the imagination.
I mean, she passed the California bar, for starters. Like, even if you wanted to engage on the merits of this, like, that's why, like, she passed the California bar. It's hard to pass. Is Charlie Cook a lawyer? I don't think so. You know what I mean? Like, JVL didn't get into med school.
Yeah. Thank you. Still too soon. You have to get out the mass spectrometer, like the micron microscope, the electron microscope. There it is. See, all these science tools. I can barely tell them apart. To examine every single clause and word in Liz Cheney's answer on abortion, Charlie can just say whatever the fuck he wants, and nobody gets to look at it. These guys.
My point is just the gap in idiocy. Like, the way that people talk about her, like, she's not smart. And then
there's
listening
a pundit
to Donald
accountability
Trump,
gap. Yes. Totally. But here's what I want to ask. So Bill, in his morning newsletter, which if you're not subscribed
Sarah's
to, you should be. I love it. I love Angry Sarah. It's like I'm looking in a mirror. And Bill noted that there is a panel out from a Democratic group showing where they were testing messages, like closing messages. And the thing which resonated the most with undecided voters was where it was former Trump officials calling him unfit, erratic, and dangerous. That's kind of hopeful, right? I mean, like, you could just put money behind all this. Instead of hoping for a press conference or something like this, you have a campaign with a ton of money. There's 14 days left, and I understand votes are already being sent in. But again, the people you got to reach at this point are not early vote people. These are the people who you're trying to, you know, get off the couch the very last minute. There are only three states. You don't have to hit the entire country with it. Couldn't you just spend $150 million, $50 million in Wisconsin, $50 million in Michigan, $50 million in Pennsylvania over the next 13 days to make this message resonate so that at least nobody can say, well, we never even heard that stuff, right? We have the audio from Kelly, right? Isn't this a solvable problem, my campaign friends?
Is the real answer? No. It's just not 1998. I mean, yeah, sure. She should do that. Yes, she should do that. And if you look at the testing, the Blueprint group that does message testing, like, it matters. Like, it matters to people when you remind them that half of Trump's cabinet isn't for him. You know, if you put, this is why it's in when Kamala, or when Sarah was doing the town hall with Kamala and Liz, Well, they both said that. They know it. Their teams are telling them that, like, this works with people. The Trump's own VP, his own chief of staff. Like, this is old news to us, right? But other people know it, but, like, don't think about it, you know? And if, like, you have to frame it in a way to make them think about it, like, doesn't that give you second, you know, a second doubt? You know, doesn't that raise the doubt in your mind? Like, if you're teetering, if you're one of these people that don't like Trump, but you might vote for him anyway, does it make you rethink that a little bit when you realize that his own chief of staff, his own national security advisor, his own VP, blah, blah, blah. So I do think so. I think it will be in paid. They're paid lately has pivoted a little bit more to that Trump is risky. He's unchecked. You heard Obama say that yesterday in his speech. So you can tell they're moving towards that message a little bit. But I just don't think that that is the equivalent of four guys standing in front of a bank of cameras saying it themselves. And sure. The efficacy of it is just much less as far
understood
as trickling it down.
Yeah. I'm just saying that if you can't get the 100% that you'd like to sure. with that, could you get 80% of that by just dropping a money bomb on it? That's my question. Just as a purely political, you know, a matter of 65%, like driving
the ads
campaigns.
Have to be good though. A lot of people tune out ads. It's more complicated than it sounds, I guess, is okay. all I'm saying. And
Fair
I think
enough.
That there is diminishing returns in paid at this date in the campaign.
Fair enough.
Yeah, there's a reason that a lot of us you put a lot of money into the ads at the end, but like a lot of times when you're trying to shape public opinion in the long term, create issues that the conversation's gonna, you know, pivot around, you spend that money early. And like, that's why we've seen a ton of movement. I mean, we do see a lot of center right voters, but right now you are trying to both sort of sweep up the last bit of people who, you know, think that Trump was better on the economy, and make them think and like, don't vote for Democrats and get them to believe that Trump is too dangerous. But I agree with you. I think this is a good closing argument, as good as, and our research, I've been on this thing about the generals for forever because all the research does show nothing, but like, I can't tell you how important it is when it's filtered through something else, like a paid ad, or it's filtered through the media. It is like 30% as effective as if they called a press conference and said it directly to the American people and let those clips go far and wide.
So this is one of our colleagues made this point to me yesterday, that it's kind of extraordinary that the Harris campaign is basically closing with the bulwark. Like it's the closing messages are basically targeted for the kind of people who read and like the bulwark, very centrist, very moderate, like really good stuff in that way. And that's kind of extraordinary and gratifying, which is nice, I think, for us, but also makes me a little nervous because, like, if it doesn't work, does that mean it's on us?
No, I mean, the reason that they're doing it the way that they're doing it is because the data shows that that's what they should be doing, right? Like, okay. They're looking at their own data that is saying, hey, about half of what's available and left are these center-right voters that we've got to convince and get over the line. It just so happens it is our cohort of people, but, like, they're not listening to us to make that decision. They made that decision because their data shows that it's the right thing to do.
So we get the credit, but not the blame. Actually, JVL, that's how that works.
If Kamala wins, we get the credit.
Other people get the blame if we lose. Just one last point on this is because JMart wrote an article about this yesterday that had a lot of people up in arms in the Never Trump world about how, the Longwell, Liz, Kamala, Charlie, Maria Shriver, weirdly, events, like, were aimed at the bulwark, right? Really. Like, he didn't say it like this, but, like, it was aimed at bulwark people more than, like, I'm a really hard right conservative, and I'm just reluctantly going to get there. And I understood to JMart's point, right? Like, maybe there's some more potential voters out there if she had pivoted even more ideologically to the center rhetorically, but she's done a lot of pivoting to the center already. But the point is, which we'll get to in the next segment, I was talking to a lot of top Democrats last night, at a social function, And like their data, like their pushback to JMART is their data basically shows that like the things that work are the generals, Mike Pence, January 6th, and abortion. And like, I know you don't think of abortion as like a conservative issue, but like in Florida right now, 60%+ on the abortion ballot initiative. So the kinds of Republicans that are gettable for her are at least in the middle somewhere on abortion. And so that's why they're talking about those issues, I guess is the point. And that's not why they're not talking about, I don't know, a balanced budget amendment or whatever. Okay.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
All right. Sarah, this is a real question. You're going to think I'm being glib, but I'm not. Kamala Harris has Gretchen Whitmer, Eminem, and the Insane Clown Posse out stumping for her. How does she not win Michigan?
I mean, think she's going to win Michigan.
Do surrogates matter is his question. Shouldn't that be helpful?
That is my question. Like, shouldn't that be helpful? Those are surrogates who aim right at the heart of, like, the Trump coalition, right? You know, angry young dudes and...
What is the Insane Clown Posse? Are they? They're like 50s now, right? I mean, these are people we were.
Tim,
kids.
Can you feel this, please?
I can.
The Juggalos. Can you explain the Juggalos to?
I'm out of my depth, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of an Insane Clown Posse diaspora. It's not the kind of music that I like. It's a little for my taste, but you know, they dress up in clown makeup. Angry people go. A lot of boys, but some women. Lesbians. I must imagine there are a couple of lesbians there, no? And they wear cargo pants, and then it has their fanship has evolved into kind of a cultural totem as well that does overlap with MAGA a little bit at times. They're called the Juggalos. The fans, some of them had showed up to kind of counter protest to Black Lives Matter at times during the 2020 protest wars. So I guess the point JBL is trying to make is like these are not the kind of elite woke
this
campus
isn't Taylor
liberals.
Swift.
Yeah, it's not Taylor Swift.
This is not Taylor Swift.
You don't see a lot of people in Insane Clown Posse gear at your local Whole Foods, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Which
and
is
as
good.
Intriguing as the cargo pants sound. I can't say that this is a demographic I've ever been hip with. I do think Eminem though. Eminem, I'm here for. Eminem is a person whose music I listened to all
obviously.
Of, even when it was. Way too angry and scary, but it
formative.
Appealed to me. Very formative. I thought it was great that they had Eminem out there. I do think, look, I get a little nervous, and I saw some people pointing this out. It's not worth me pointing it out, but I would just say in general, like, oh, you've got Springsteen. Like, there's something about, like, Democrats do have all the good celebrities. And I do think that it's good when they use their massive social media profiles. Like, it doesn't hurt, but the idea that surrogates can be decisive now is, I don't know. It has not in the modern era of Trump. Trump is his own kind of celebrity and has his own, like, celebrity world that I'm just not sure, like, maybe young men notice that Eminem is doing it, but also like Eminem, I don't know, is he like, old. He's old now, right? He's like got grown kids and I don't know. So I look, you know, I think surrogates matter. And I thought Joe Biden needed them. I have cooled on my need for surrogates pitch since Kamala Harris is able to make her own case for her campaign. And I really think people want to see her more than anything else. You needed it for Biden because he couldn't do it.
Right.
All right.
I agree with that. I would say this. I have one thought, one positive thought about this before we get to close with my negativity. And that is, it matters in this election, I think, a little bit more than others, because the two demos that you're trying to talk to at this point are the people we've been talking about the whole first 45 minutes of this. College-educated, high-income Republican types that you're trying to scare off of Trump. And then the other people are people who are like, who is John Kelly? What is a John Kelly? What is a JVL? Right? Like, so having surrogates out there that could conceivably reach people that are like, I literally don't know who any of these people are or what you're talking about. I just see the memes. Like, trying to reach them through influencers, through celebrities, is a valuable use of the campaign's time in this election in particular.
It's also good. Look, I just think right now in your closing arguments, like in JVL, this goes to a point you've made that I think is really true, that I think they're struggling with right now, which is like, how do you own news cycles? How do you make it so that you are the one people are talking about? And Donald Trump is really good at this, like working the fryer at McDonald's. Like the way that they do that, it's not that you might as a listener be like, but that was a stunt and they closed it down. And I'm like, yeah, are you talking about this? Are you talking about Donald Trump working at McDonald's? Like, they win. That's how they win. And I think that you want them to be like, ooh, Eminem endorsing Kamala Harris as part of a news cycle, right? You're trying to dominate sort of the attention economy.
He wants Nazi generals.
Yeah.
All right, Tim. We gotta close this out because we're running long. But you have some important feelings to share, and I'm here for them.
I do. I don't want to be the person. The core tenet of the Bulwark and of the podcast that I'm on in particular is that I don't bullshit you. Like, you just get what I'm saying at a party is what I'm saying at a podcast. And so I had a little guilt last night because I was at James Carville's 80th birthday party. It was amazing. I felt like
that
it
must
was,
have been.
It felt like it was sacrilegious, actually, that I only got to have one drink because, you know, we got a lot happening right now. So I only had one drink. I had a great time. But there were a lot of Democratic poobahs there. A lot of people close to Kamala and Joe Biden were there, and you know, I was saying to all of them already that I'm like really concerned. I'm really concerned. Like what I said at the tour last week. I don't denounce, like, I still think she's a clear path to 276, which is too narrow. I think she's probably the favorite in all of those states, a very narrow favorite in those four seats to get 276. I agree with Sarah's point that I'd rather have older people and women in my coalition than men. That said, like, there are three outs for Trump, and I don't like three coin flips where you got to get tails every time. Like, that worries me a lot. And it's not exactly like that because they sort of move together. It's not really like three coin flips, but you know what I mean? I don't like the fact that he only needs to win one of those to break the to break the 270, and that there's not a great clear alternate path, like North Carolina maybe. That worries me. And I think at this point it's a pure toss up to me. And I'm mentally coming to terms with the fact that Trump could actually win. And when I was pressing all of those people last night who like are in a position to know, in a position to see private data, I kept hoping that they were going to tell me something about what they're seeing in House races or Senate races or some or the early whatever. I was hoping they were going to give me a fact that I could hold on to, and they didn't give me anything. I had no conversation that made me feel better, and frankly, most of the conversations made me feel worse. So
isn't that good in a way?
Yeah, sure. No, yeah,
they're not whistling past the graveyard.
So, yeah,
no, not even expectations wise. Like, it suggests the Democrats are not shining themselves up and deluding themselves that their position is better than it is.
That's true.
That's good.
They're not shining themselves up. They all think it's close. They all are confident, but in that same narrow path that Sarah's been laying out. So, anyway, I say that not because I want people to get down. I want everybody to be motivated and to get going. And I also say that, like, I was wrong in 2016. We were pretty right in 2020. In 2022, I was wrong about the House. We were right about the Senate and the governor's race. I guess I missed Nevada in 22. So, you know, you get right and wrong. And this is not like, I don't have new information. It's just the path the path is very precarious, and I was kind of the negative Nancy at the party last night, so I didn't want to be a phony about it on the podcast.
You know, I appreciate that, and I want to say something on this point as well. Although, like, we've litigated sort of our feelings plenty, yeah. So I don't want to get into that. But I do want to. I've had a lot of. I haven't been able to be as responsive to like media requests of late. There's a lot of people right now who are texting me, emailing me, saying, you know, what are your focus groups saying, right? Because everybody wants a tea leaf read. Right. Everybody wants to like open the bird and read its entrails and like figure it out. And so since I've not been responsive to the media requests, you can all feel free to quote me from this section, because this is what is happening in the focus groups. But it's deeply unsatisfying, which is I could make a case either way using what I'm hearing in the focus groups for either to win. Because here is the long and short of it. We are constantly looking at swing voters, meaning people who voted for Trump in 16, Biden in 20. We're trying to figure out, does that coalition hang together, right? Because they made up the margins in 2020. And the fact is, the vast majority of people in every single one of the groups that we do is voting for Kamala Harris. And when she was swapped out for Biden, she did a tremendous amount. We saw a huge surge in the groups of people being like, I'm voting third party. Oh, I can't stand these choices. We saw the elimination of the double haters. And we really, like I always said, with speed and alacrity, she put the coalition back together. And so that's good for her. But in almost every group, you get some clean sweeps. Sometimes we had a clean sweep in Pennsylvania recently for Kamala Harris from the swing voters. But in most of the groups, you're losing one or two people back to Trump. Like there's some backsliding. It's almost always about the economy or immigration. They are just like a general sense that they don't like the way that things have gone under Joe Biden. And so that makes me nervous. You lose a couple people when the margins are that narrow. There's also another group of swing voters, though, and these are the ones that I think Kamala Harris has been doing well with, which tend to be two-time Trump voters who were out after January 6th. And a lot of them are old white voters in these key states that she needs to win, who came to the Republican Party because they voted for Ronald Reagan. Right. And when you look at young Republicans,
Poppy Bush right, voters, key demo.
That's right. Who thought like they held their nose and voted for Trump. But then they kind of thought like after January 6th, they were like, I'm done with this. So we call them two-time Trump voters who are out on Trump. Those are the people who are struggling to get there on Kamala Harris, but are out on Trump. And so like, what do? Do they stay home? Do they write something in? Do they go third party? I hear a sort of a broad I think some of them are going to vote for Kamala Harris. Some of them are just going to say, I'm going to leave the top blank. And I think that the question is kind of like, how does that all add up once Kamala Harris has turned everybody out and Donald Trump has turned everybody out? And I don't think there's a pundit in the world right now who knows the answer to it. My only thing that I can say is that I believe, and if you ask me, what am I going to watch? It is non-college women, non-college white women specifically. But I think black women turnout is going to be as big as we've ever seen it. I think there's going to be some slide in Hispanic and black voters. I think if she can do just about as well with, if she can blow the doors off with the college educated suburban voters that we continue to politically realign, that continues this political realignment. And then she's able to up the numbers with non-college white women because of abortion and Donald Trump being a disgusting, despicable human, that she can win those states. And that's my bull case. But
that makes
it.
Me feel
oh,
all right.
On that.
That makes me feel much
good
better
show.
Than every elite Democrat I talked to last night. So thank you for that, Sarah.
Good show, long show, less than 2 weeks. Next Wednesday will be our last pre-election next level. Good luck, America.